Hey, thanks for tuning into the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty, and today we're here to talk about Battle Lords, the 23rd Century, a legendary RPG that is back with a new edition. And I made a mistake and didn't introduce myself to the two folks below me from 23rd Century Productions, so I'm going to ask you to introduce yourselves to me and our listeners.
Hello, I'm David Sirico. I'm part of the design team for 23rd Century Productions.
Hi, I'm Michelle Sirico. I'm also part of the design team for 23rd Century Productions.
Okay, so David and Michelle, and you guys are wearing color-coordinated camouflage shirts?
Yes.
Oh, official Battle Lord swag. Okay, cool. Yep.
That is fantastic.
And if I'm back away, we'll probably see a demo.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
You know, I had this image that you're going to have like a Battle Lord's fanny pack back there, and I'm so glad that wasn't the case.
Worthy of a death noogie.
All right. So I got to ask, because Walt told me about this death noogie thing, and he was so happy about it. I never understood what is the death noogie, and how is it associated with Battle Lords of the 23rd century?
Well, before we do that, should we not like get some of the history of the game first so that it has some context?
Yes, please.
Context is important.
David.
A game that's been out since 1990. If I have my memory correct, right? 1990 is the year?
I think that's correct. I don't remember the exact date. Larry Sim.
According to Wikipedia, that was when it first came out, 1990.
Oh, I remembered correctly.
From the Optimus Design Systems.
Mm-hmm. Optimus Design Systems, Larry Sims, former mm-hmm. of the military, and he came up with a concept and started pitching it way back then. And the key focus of the game has been, and we continue to support, a group of different people, in this case, different species, that have stereotypes of each other and hold grudges sometimes for past wars, all coming together to form a team to survive and thrive in a world that is very dangerous. It's a very dangerous future out there.
Cool. So with some basic context provided, can someone explain the death noogie to me?
Well, that's your story. Go for it.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, like I was saying earlier in the chat, I roll out of Fort Bragg in the early 90s, and they had this game store right on Yadkin Road, The Hobbit. I don't know if it's still there, but we used to go there on Saturdays for Battletech and stuff like that. And these guys are in the back and they're at this game table and they're just going bananas. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? So we get back there and, you know, I'm like, you know, what's going on? Oh, Battle Lords of the 23rd century. I'm what is this magical thing you speak of? And, you know, the guy was like, hold on, I'll explain it in 1 second. I have to have my character give this guy a death noogie. And I'm like, what? This is amazing. So, you know, of course, they didn't judge me for the fact that I didn't know about the game or the fact that I was infantry. They let me sit down and play and had a whole load of fun. It had a grittier feel than Traveler had at the time, mm-hmm. with the interesting part being, oh my God. Sorry, guys. My own Pythonian. It's like a furry velociraptor. So they had it had a grittier feel than Traveler. It had just a sense of very dangerous environment combined with a sense of humor it didn't apologize for, and I really enjoyed the game at that time. So that was a lot of fun. It was basically one of the races in this setting, the Pythonians, and the very lizard like serpentine race. There's two types of them. Yes, there's the big guy. And back then in the art, they didn't look as oh no! I think he hit a button. the book accidentally hit F5.
So, for people who don't know the 23rd century, there are two types of pythons: python lizards and ram pythons, and those are the two types.
And the guy was talking about the ram pythons, who are less eloquent and slightly more brutish. And one of their favorite tactics was to run up to guys in powered armor, wrap their arm around it, and rub the knuckles on the armor until the armor gave away and their head exploded. And I was just like, this is amazing! So, yeah, that's a little bit of history on the death noogie. Can you guys expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, so just for clarity, it's not just a lizard guy. It's a 10-foot tall, 700-pound lizard guy that can lift the front end of an M1 Abrams, probably with one arm. So when he goes to do a death noogie rub, there's really not much that's going to stop him.
Mike, do you mind if I screen share off my screen for a second? Because I have a picture of a ram python from the third edition book.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. Going back.
Please proceed.
Okay. Let me just share this. This is a ram python.
Send that up, Mike. Yes.
That's ram python. He is ginormous.
It's also likely the last thing you're going to see if he's coming after you.
Uh-huh. And going up a little bit, that is the lizard python, is my memory.
In the new edition, everything is now full color. So if you see the new stuff, everything is updated and full color.
That's beautiful book. Yeah, well, as I recall, like the first five or six editions went in rapid succession of for 1 year after another. You guys kept making updates and changes, and then you guys stuck with it for 93 to 95. I don't remember which, but you guys at that point stuck with the edition, and that's the edition that I have the most familiarity with. So I guess that would be like fifth edition. Sorry, it's been a while.
Pretty sure you probably have the red cover.
Yeah, I have it somewhere.
Yeah, the red cover edition was, I believe, the third or the fourth edition.
Okay.
There were two editions after that, which I actually have one of those here on my desk as well, before we got to what's now the seventh edition. Mm-hmm. So this one's really picking up after, I think, about a 15-year...
Yeah, 15, 20-year...
Been about 15, 20 years since they published sixth edition, and so we wanted to take advantage of it. There we go. Yeah, got that one.
Yeah, so... the book went from Larry Sims writing it to he sold the company to Mike and some of the others that formed SSDC, and they published it. But then again, life happened, and they had not had time or energy to do an update. So then we took over from them, and we had worked with Mike and the company, for a while. So then we wanted to breathe some fresh air into it. So we started upon this journey to bring it back, update it completely. Some of the rules, we're just old, at the time. I mean, if you can look at the computer rules, I mean, you purchase a nice, 286 equivalent, and
they 40 meg hard drive.
They were very, very old school computers.
40 megs was at one point in time a whole lot of space.
Yep.
It was. Yeah. Yep.
Yes. Zip drive was sci-fi.
So, we wanted to streamline the rules, keep the gritty feel, but maybe help with some of the playability. Upgrade the book to, a nice hardcover book, heavyweight pages, full color art, but still keep with the original feel.
Yeah. So just for context for people who have not played Battlelord, some quick and easy reference points to help people get a sense of the feel. So the dark and gritty nature of worlds that you see in movies like Blade Runner or Fifth Element, where there's people who are even Altered Carbon. You have people who are ultra rich, live in the really cool Sky City, and then you have everyone who's maybe in the clouds, but not quite, they're in the skyscraper section of the building. And then you got the people who are on the ground. So you've got people who are haves, you've got very much who are have nots. There's a big divide between those two. The companies own everything. And kind of like a Judge Dredd feel, you mentioned comedy or dark humor, lives are cheap and the companies move people around as they see fit. And so there's a certain amount of, they may not be actively out to get you, but they definitely don't care if you die, kind of a thing. And there's definitely some dark humor elements to it as well.
We have a critical hit table, that has lots of detailed outcomes. So when you roll a crit, you get to have,
you can talk about how you got your liver hit or, head top of head blown off or whatever. You can add that in as just color for the combat section of things. Then there's, if you've played the Ram Pythons, you might remember that they worship. And so they have this table for something called Chunga, which is They basically fart to prey. And so you have a roll on how bad it is. What's the outcome? So there's some entertainment. Lots of little quirks that come out. One of the interesting things you mentioned, Traveler, one of the other interesting things, Traveler had a series of progressions on how you could grow your character before you actually started. Battlelords does something vaguely similar. They have the I was just growing up tables, and you roll. And sometimes you get, hey, you were walking your dog, and you picked up a wallet that was laying on the ground. It's got a bunch of money in it. What do? You also have, oh, you were on a space liner, and it got space-jacked by a bunch of pirates. You were shot in the face. You now eat out of a tube. So just all kinds of things and everything in the middle. So it helps you.
Rough day in the office.
Yeah, exactly. And so you get all kinds of context on your background that you can incorporate into your character to help build some depth.
If you want. If you have a great character background and you want to play it, you don't have to use those tables. Yep. So that's an optional rule.
All right, cool. Quick question. When you guys were on the Kickstarter, did you get a lot of people asking you, how is this different from Rifts?
No, I don't. Not so much.
I mean, Rifts is Rifts has that element of sweeping apocalypse, causing galaxy-wide changes, and this really didn't ever strike like that. Instead, it was more like Star Wars and Babylon 5 went to a strip club, and then came out. finally came out a man. It had all the elements of those two properties, but it had a dark humor that really spoke to a lot of soldiers and stuff like that at the time, because the deployments were far and few, so you had much more people who were looking for that that connection to some of the old timers who had been to things like Panama and Grenada and Vietnam and stuff like that. And those Vietnam vets were getting out, and they always had that dark humor that a lot of us really identified with for some reason. And that game kind of had it, like the hit location tables, things like the Death Noogie, mountain lions in powered armor with shoulder mounted cannons. I mean, what's the name of those? Cesarac.
Yeah. And the Cesaracs are all female, warrior race. They keep their men at home in chains where they belong.
So for people who want to get into this game that aren't familiar and such like that, can you talk a little bit about the engine and how it'll play? Is it still the percentile dice is the primary mechanic?
Yeah, we call it, I think it's labeled a D150 now. X150. So basically everything's more or less on a 150-point scale. 100, if you remember the old rules, 100 was like peak human. Mm-hmm. And then if you're a ram python, obviously you're very strong. So
and then you went up to 150.
Yeah, so we've added some rules in for that. So it's basically everything's going to come down to a skill type of a check. You're rolling a percentile type of a roll. We've tried to be consistent in the book. It's almost always the case. There's a couple exceptions, but in general, you're going to want to roll low. So in this game, one, you did it. Double Zod, you failed. Probably gloriously.
And so, yes, you're rolling a percentile. So, but if you roll, you can still fail, even if, because there's modifiers. So say if you're lifting a car, it would be like a negative 20 check. But if you're lifting, a tank, that might be a negative 70 check. So, and on up. So you add modifiers considering how difficult the task.
And as I remember, basically, you have your score, and then you want to roll under that score, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So just because you have, 150% chance to get it right doesn't mean you're going to succeed every time, because you might need to, there might be a lot of modifiers on that.
Mm-hmm. Might be like range and cover and such like that. And all of a sudden you're like, wait, how did I go from 150 down to 50?
Yeah.
Or worse.
This is an impossible shot. I'm doing it anyway.
Yes,
I'm going to shoot him in the eye. He's flying along at 200 kilometers an hour.
There you go.
So did you roll a 5 or less? wait, I thought I had 150. Well, you did before you were shooting at him a mile away, going 200 kilometers an hour.
Yep. Shooting the eye of the pilot in a spacecraft way far away.
Yep. And we also have the malfunction rule. So you may have rolled, you may have rolled perfectly fine to hit them, but you've exceeded, that would under normal circumstances, but just because you've just hit some limits, you needed a 95, you roll a 98, but your weapon has a malfunction number. So one of the things you can get into is the malfunctions. Maybe you rolled over your malfunction number and all of a sudden your weapon jams, if you're lucky. Or maybe it just became a time bomb. And you're like, get it off. Is it far enough? No, run.
I'm paging through your preview here on the share screen. I got to say, you've got some really nice art in here.
Thank you. So if you go out to DriveThruRPG, we actually have a free PDF that is the interior art, if you want to pull that up.
I think this is the free preview right here, I think. Kickstarter edition interior preview.
Yep, that's it. Exactly. Yep. So that's someplace people can go if they want to see what's in the book. That's a great way to look and see what some of the artwork is. So one of the design concepts we had from a book perspective, less from a mechanics perspective, was we want to make it coffee table material. You didn't have to play it. We wanted it so pretty you could put it out on your desktop, on your tabletop, and just look at it and look at it on a coffee table and go, ooh, that's a really cool picture. So we have a lot of really cool artwork, and we've sourced from a lot of different people, and we've tried to keep it consistent on grit and grind, because the future that we're talking about is a dark future. It's not like the Star Trek, everything's pristine, or Guardians of the Galaxy, where all the colors are very strong and everything's clean and clear. It's much more that Blade Runner, things are run down, things are patched, people graffiti things, all of those kinds of elements.
And we also took a lot of different artists. So we have the same grit, you know, feeling, but we have a lot of different artists because the universe is unique. Mm-hmm. And we don't want the same artist doing everything. We want it to picture, you know, a unique, broad, you know, universe with lots of different perspective, which is kind of what this Battle Lords, you know, universe is about.
All right, cool. So we can get Indie Press Revolution, Drive-Thru RPG. Obviously, you have your own website. Let's see, that's 23rdcentury.net. And this paging through it, this is a really beautiful book. Nice job.
Yeah, thank you. Another comment you asked about the book a little while back that I didn't get to is one of the things we did and why it's so darn hefty. We wanted the original books really just focused on kind of early stage gameplay. You know, going to D&D is something because most people who are looking at this probably are familiar with D&D as a concept. Aimed at levels 1 to 10 kind of a concept is what the main core books were before, and then you get other material to kind of build that out. What we wanted for the core book is really everything that would take you from 1 to 20. So nice. In this book, one of the things you couldn't get in the core rules before was something that in the game we call Humpties. They're the far future version of tanks. You're running around in big mecha type things with massive armor, fighting massive alien creatures that can rip them apart. So you get into a little bit different world with that. So there you can see one in the background there. And in there, mm-hmm. you can see there's a mecha in the background. I can't remember which one that one is. The one before, it's a scorpion leopard, which is actually a fairly small version. It's comparable to human size almost, or close. The big ones are huge. And so we wanted people to have the option to kind of come out as, hey, I've got a stick and a pistol, and I'm hoping I don't run into a bear, to, yeah, I got one of these. There we go. There's one of the Humpies. There's a Chieftain. It's an older model, but we love it. It's got a buzz on the left. It's got a cannon on top, and it's got a, you know, nice machine gun there on the right arm. And I can walk around and chop things up with the left arm while I'm shooting other things with the right arm.
Sounds like Saturday night.
Exactly.
Walt steals my jokes again. I understand the name Humpty now. That makes sense now that I see it. So, all right, cool. So what's next for Battle Lords of the 23rd Century?
So we are actually actively doing a Kickstarter right now for our first supplemental book. It's called Charlie Foxtrot. Think about that for a second. It's a set of 5 one-shot adventures. And the intent is to kind of highlight the different types of gameplay. So the original game, as those who've played it before remember, is really focused on either a group of soldiers or even a mercenary group. Two main types of basically combat from a perspective of really a combat team, soldiers or mercenaries. We've added in styles of play, including more of a spy kind of a genre to it, or more of a Firefly Serenity kind of feel, where you can be out on the fringe trying to survive via smuggling or even flat out piracy. So trying to give people alternatives, gameplays, types. And so with that, we wanted to give some scenarios to get people started that cover lots of different types of play and also lots of different levels. So here there's a game in there that is focused at you just started off, and then there's one where you've got some pretty serious equipment and you're dealing with some seriously nasty critters and everything.
Looks like you guys are at 9,000 and change out of a goal of 5,500. Congratulations. And 3 days left to go. So still time to jump on the bandwagon.
Exactly. Plenty of time to jump on the bandwagon, and at 10,000 is the next stretch goal. So see if we can't get that one.
Coming up close. Yep. All right, cool. Walt, do you have any more questions or anything?
What was the original Kickstarter like when you went to Kickstarter? Were people like, oh my God, I need this now? Or did they, did you have to search for people? Because, I mean, this was pretty loved back in the day.
Mm-hmm. It was. So we did have, we'd pulled from various sources, old mailing groups and all kinds of things. So we kind of were able to get an initial start. But after that, it seems like all Kickstarters, I did a lot of research into this as we were kind of figuring out how to do a good Kickstarter because we really wanted to make sure this could take off. So there's kind of that initial surge of enthusiasm. And so this, it kind of shoots up. I'll kind of go here. And then it kind of, not plateaus, but it slows down a lot. And then at the very end, it tends to pick up again. You got the early adopters and you've got a bunch of people that wait to the last minute. Yeah. So that's kind of how that one went. And for a while we were sweating if we were going to fund. And then
it was nerve wracking for sure. But, yeah. A bunch of people jumped on at the beginning, but then it just sat there and, you know, we were biting our nails. It's like, okay, are people going to want this or not? But it.
And then in the last 3 days, it was like, okay, I think we're going to fund. It's like, we're going to fund. And then we funded. And it's like, oh, and then stretch goal. Oh, and then stretch goal. So we just bang, 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 bang. All of a sudden it just took off, which was great.
Well, from my perspective, we try and keep up with TTRPG Kickstarters and such, but Brandon and I did not hear about this one. He just texted hello to everyone and is sad he's missing this. When I told him the subject of today's, he's like, whoa, that's a blast from the past. So, awesome. Yeah, we were talking about the fact that we haven't been talking about this game since early 2000s, late 90s, 2000s. Right. And so hearing this and seeing this, yeah, we definitely would like to talk to you after this segment's over.
Oh, awesome. Great. Definitely.
Yeah, I guess I should, Alice, who's gracious enough to join us today, also runs the Babies with Knives podcast. Interesting name, I know. And they do lots and lots of RPG demos over there.
Oh, great.
Perfect. So, yeah, that's their kind of our sister podcast. They do a great job. Yes. So everyone check them out.
Yeah, her, Brandon, and Alicia.
I thought that was Felicia today.
Yes. Yeah. Inside joke. Everybody messes up Alice's name somehow.
I don't know how.
Usually it's just me, but okay. Anyway, I accidentally called Alice Alicia like a month ago and I'm still hearing about it. So that's what now you guys are up to date.
Never let it go.
Something tells me that I'm going to get a visit from a ram python pretty soon.
If I can find a furry out there in New Hampshire who has a python costume, I might have him knock on your door and talk to you.
No, see, I think that he'd be more subtle. He'd show up as a chitillion.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But I don't think anybody would get past the door. I have a 70-pound flying chainsaw attached to the alarm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You're Mel and Will. Yeah.
For those who don't know, chitillions are psychics. They're mentalists. So, you know, my joke about him being more subtle is just using mind games.
Absolutely.
So this updated version, we have a couple new races. We have the Razat, which are basically giant cockroaches that love to work in engineering. And then we have the Keen, which are kind of an amphibious creature that glides and changes color to blend in with the background. We've also brought back the Fot that was in one of the supplemental books. We brought that right up into the main book. Those are your... Uncle Ernie put them on a planet to basically annoy the Alliance. They are giant redneck bunny rabbits.
Redneck rabbits with guns.
Redneck rabbits with guns. And they, of course, reproduce like rabbits. So they live a Jerry Springer lifestyle, but are
I love this universe.
So
they're very popular.
Very popular.
Lots of gameplay options.
Lots of gameplay options. People have been enjoying the FOT for sure.
Yeah, we've gotten a suggestion that we need a FOT supremacy dog tag.
So. Oh God.
I think I might have a picture of one of those. One second here. Yeah, here we go.
Yeah, if you go to the main book.
About. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
There you go.
There we go. Creepy rabbits. With backward bending knees.
Dear nice. God.
Cool.
Imagine that showing up to drop off the Easter basket.
Oh, and here's the keen you mentioned.
Yeah, there's your keen.
Is that an egg or is that a grenade?
Seeing that picture makes me want to say, Utani!
Humans, Mazians. I can't say that name, can you?
Wutzaken.
Wutzaken.
So my memory is that there were two types of humans before. There's still two types of humans. There's like the normal, and then there's like the cloned or genetically modified humans.
Yeah.
So gen humans are basically genetically engineered, grown humans versus the kind of the more natural way of getting humans. And so they're kind of a halfway is not exactly the right measure, but they're partway between human and android. They're specifically designed with some kind of an outcome in mind. So they typically have a quirk, an ability, an affinity for a skill. There's something modified in their DNA that makes them good at something. And so there's a whole, I think it's like 2-page table of different things you can acquire in terms of skills as a genetically modified human. And the regular human's advantage. And so one of the things we did do just from a game mechanics perspective is in the old rules, because of how the game mechanics were designed, you tended to have people playing the Scissorax and the Rampythons. It was a little harder to get parity with some of the other species. So what we wanted to do is help level the playing field a little bit better. So there's a lot more game options. So humans really, their skill or their drawing point from a game mechanics perspective is their flexibility. They can learn anything and be good at anything. So it's really hard to match that from a skills perspective, since it's a skill-based game. They will never match the Rampython for strength. Oh,
there's a Chitillion right there.
Yep,
just there was Chitillion for a moment. Yep. That's still very very in line with the art from older editions.
Yes.
Yes.
That very pine cone, green pine cone head.
Yeah. Targus head.
Mm-hmm. And we didn't, do too much, to completely change, from the art of the old editions. So, we definitely kept, the same spirit in there. We just, again, like the Fintari is hot pink because, aliens are alien. Why wouldn't they be hot pink? Why wouldn't we, why would they be, human? So there's lots of different options.
Go. There's the Fintari.
There it is.
Fuchsia, yeah. Kind of purpley.
Yeah, fuchsia, purple, hot pink kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Different ones will have slightly different skin tones. Some will be more on the pink side. Some will be more on the fuchsia side. There you go.
I talk about the tension between character species. The Fintari jokingly talk about eating humans, and we're never always sure if they're being serious about it or not, because their whole species culture is really survival of the fittest. And in their context, if they can get away with something and nobody knows about it, then it's legal. Mm-hmm. And the ones who get caught deserve to die, not necessarily because it's illegal, but because they got caught. If you're doing it right, it doesn't matter how you suddenly ended up in your boss's position and why they're gone and have been gone for months. Oh, well.
So there's a certain pragmatic moral flexibility at work there.
Yes, there is.
Yes.
Well, hey, speaking of pragmatic moral flexibility, I've got to wrap things up and get back to my soul-deadening day job over here. I'm sure up on my right. Any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I'm really, really happy to see you guys bring this back after almost 20 years, because it's, like I said, blast from the past. I can't wait to see more about it. I'm sorry that I did not see the Kickstarter recently.
Yeah, I was in the same boat. And for those out there that are thinking about backing the new Kickstarter, are they able to get some of the old rewards on this one? If they want to do like an add-on for the for that pretty brick that you have on your table, the book.
Yes.
The book.
New Fox, in the new Kickstarter, you can get the core rule book in one of the goals.
Yeah, there's several options where like to get PDF and PDF, Charlie Foxtrot and the core rules, or you can go full in at $100 and get the print and PDF copies of both.
Yep.
So there's okay. definitely some options in there. There's also one with a t-shirt. It won't be exactly this, but
yeah, if we get to the upper level stretch goal, we're making available some spiffy t-shirts, kind of like these, that people have been dying for, and you know, those haven't come out very much at all. So.
And we do have, and when we switch gears from the Kickstarter into Backer Kit, we will have add-ons. So there will be people be able to buy additional dog tags, toe tags, and there's some other things. If you go down and look through there, there's some in the add-on section of the Kickstarter. You'll be able to see all the different cool stuff that we'll have after Kickstarter. There's too many different flavors to throw in there, so he's like, well, let's just take that as add-ons after the fact, because
that's
not the core product.
No, we will have a link in the show notes, but if someone just Googles Charlie Foxtrot Battle Lords Kickstarter, yours is the first one that comes up. So, and don't move slowly on that, because 3 days left. So this is time to jump on.
Now's the time to jump in.
Go quick.
And it is funded, so you know you've got something coming.
And the book Charlie Foxtrot is essentially done. It just needs a few more pieces of art, and you know, it's essentially done. You know, the main reason for the Kickstarter was, do we just release it via PDF, or do we have funding to do some, you know, actual print versions? So we are now that we will have funding to do print versions.
And anybody who's done Battle Lords before, just as a point of awareness, we are working towards the next Lock and Load, which is a thicker book strictly focused on equipment, armor, weapons, all kinds of fun toys with which you can rearrange the world to your pleasure.
All right, sounds good. Alice, Walt, any closing thoughts?
Thanks, guys, for coming out. We really appreciate it. As like I said, we're unaware of your original Kickstarter, so we're like, yes, this is awesome. So, when you got new products coming out, would you be interested in coming on and talking to us again?
Absolutely,
absolutely, anytime.
Awesome. All right, sounds good. Pleasure talking to you guys, and to all our listeners and viewers, we'll catch you next time on the Banff Podcast.
All right, great. Thank you.
And he's.